Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Discover the Finger Lakes on WYSL 1040, 92.1 FM. And one note that although the Brighton Farmers Market is closed, the Newbury Park Pastries has been hosting some farmers, and they are doing that on Sunday afternoons, kind of 1 to 4. Similar times that the Brighton Market used to be on. And Kate Schlenker from Newbury Park Pastries posted a teaser on Instagram of one of the homemade super cool masks they get. This one has like mustaches on it or something. It is cool. It's a little weird. And of course, that's what makes it cool. So check this out. You can follow Newbury Park Pastries on Instagram and keep up to date with what they're doing. Kate's open today. Her regular Saturday hours with all kinds of pot pies and Mushroom Boulevard. So 11 to 5 today, but tomorrow from 1 to 4, there'll be a number of other vendors there. There's about maybe 4 or 5 other vendors, some set up outside so that there's some good distance between the vendors. And they're not trying to replicate the Brighton Farmers Market. They're just trying to bring a few vendors and really keep those small businesses going. You know, that's the key. So Kurt from Clearview Farm, he's usually there on Sundays and has both chicken eggs and duck eggs, but also had some beautiful spinach, and he also has grass-fed beef available and a few other things. And Felon's Farm brought in some beautiful baby kale and celeriac, and then Pasta Classics is there, and it's Robin from Bishoping Farms that's bringing these handmade masks, and Bobby from Wolschlegel's is usually there also with maple syrup. So again, that's tomorrow from 1 to 4, and this little mini market is both indoors and outdoors, is on Mushroom Boulevard, and that's in the Genesee Regional Market, kind of the end of Mushroom Boulevard, and it's a little out of the way. You're probably not a part of the Genesee Regional Market you've been to anytime recently, and it's kind of at the end of that street. It's basically behind Home Depot and the Christmas Tree Shop. So 1 to 4 tomorrow, when these other vendors are coming, and Kate is there with her pot pies today, 11 to 5. But I would call first if you're looking for one in particular, and she can set that aside for you, whether it's today or tomorrow. And again, as I mentioned last hour, these small businesses are, you know, like everyone else, just trying to get through this period and survive it. So your support or your telling someone else about it can make a significant difference, and not just in the, you know, psychologically in terms of businesses that are trying to survive, but also in even relatively small amounts of money and purchases can make a big difference right now. So if you have some favorite small businesses, now would be a good time to find a way to support them. And if you want to mention any of them, send me an email, michael@saferlife.com. Let me know what you do, what you discover when you go, or check online or order online or get a gift card. It is still important now to stay home if possible. Yesterday I broke out of the house, got in the car and just headed west, And I'd ordered some wine from Arrowhead Spring Vineyards and decided I would go pick it up myself, which I guess violates that stay-at-home idea, except that I was not going to stop anywhere. I was just in my car, and I'm not going to infect anyone or get infected driving in my car along Route 104. So, when I got to the winery, they put the wine in the trunk of my car, and I headed right home. It was pretty simple, and now I have some great wine to enjoy. And they also ship, so it could come to your door. But I really wanted to get out, and I'm used to driving around a lot, really, visiting sponsors, doing interviews, etc. And so it felt a little strange, actually, to be out driving. I was trying to beat the snow that was supposed to start around 4 or 5 tomorrow, or 4 or 5 yesterday. And it started snowing a little bit when I was in Lockport, at Arrowhead Spring Vineyards. But a beautiful drive. I mean, Route 104 is it's a fascinating drive with all the cobblestone houses. There were a couple of sheds, barns, I'm not sure what they were, that were kind of close to the road and looked really sketchy in terms of whether they were going to remain standing. As I drove by, I almost wanted to slow down so that, like, the wind generated from my car wasn't the final thing that collapse these buildings. So there's some structures that are in serious trouble, and I really wondered how much longer they're going to be standing. But then, of course, these gorgeous cobblestones, and usually you drive around our region, you'll see cobblestones occasionally, but when you go out Route 104, you see a lot of them, and you see a cobblestone church and the cobblestone societies out there. You see a whole variety of different kinds of buildings made with cobblestones. And there's a few of them that use the really narrow stones, and then they put them on an angle and creates this incredible work of art. And I should have stopped to take some photos. I was, you know, these people that in these houses, there's probably a fair number of people who stop to take photos of their cobblestones because they're so unusual. Most cobblestones have more roundish stones, cobbles. And in several of these, there's one up on Ridge Road on the way to Williamson in Ontario, I think. There aren't many around that area, but there's one on Route 104 that has this. But they're not as narrow as the ones that I saw on Route 104. It was between Holly and Medina, and these narrow stones all laid along in a line on an angle were just fascinating. And I couldn't slow down enough because there were a car fairly close to me. I should have pulled over and taken a photo or two. I'm going to have to do that next time. Really amazing cobblestone houses and gorgeous. Seeing how many you run into as you're driving on Route 104 for, you know, basically most of the way to Lockport, it felt like. A lot of agriculture and a lot of small businesses. I thought it was a fascinating drive. And then on the way back, I came back on Route 31. So talk some more about this with our guest who's with us, Chris Clemens from Exploring Upstate, is with us. Good morning, Chris.
Hey, good morning, Michael. How are you?
Awesome. Nice to have you on the line, because I was really missing doing that drive with you yesterday, and being able to do it together, and one of us hopping out and taking photos of things and it was not as fun to do myself, but I did really enjoy getting out of the house.
You know, there's a few people that I really enjoy taking rides with and seeing new places with. You're obviously one of them, but I've been texting with another friend of mine who was saying, like, you know what I miss most is just hopping in a car with friends and a cup of coffee and driving, and not even necessarily just the destination, but the journey that goes along with that. And I agree, I'm missing that. I've almost been thinking, like, you know, on your drive yesterday, what if I just drove behind you in my car and we talked on the phone? But probably not the same.
No, I did think of that also.
at least I'm not the only one. I love that you just spent so much time talking about those cobblestones. That stretch of road is just really, really wonderful to drive for that reason. You drove right past the Cobblestone Society Museum. Did you see that, the church?
Oh, yeah. I've been in there, sure.
That's a neat place. So they have been working on a project along with the Landmark Society of Western New York and SUNY Geneseo and photography master. He's an artist who restores old photographs who out of Holly. His name is Greg Lawrence. They've been creating a publicly accessible database of all the cobblestone structures in our region. So it's currently in its beta form, which is available to look at, and you can see it right on the Cobblestone Museum Society website. I think it's under a resources tab, but they're going to be releasing the final version of that. The plan was spring or early summer, so that's a pretty cool thing to, if you can't drive and stop at those places, that's a cool resource to check out online.
And maybe that'll keep some of us from stopping and taking photos, you know, because they're online and available. And, you know, if I lived in that house, it would probably get annoying after a while if lots of people started taking photos. Then they come up to get close-ups, and they're, like, right next to their window or something. I mean, I would use a telephoto, I suppose, but then again, you don't really want people with telephotos right outside your house. So I'm glad the Cobblestone Museum is doing this.
Yeah, totally. So I believe, as you were talking about the house on 104 with the really thin cobbles that were at different angles, I actually stopped at that house one time because it's so incredible. The intricacy and the design work of those cobbles is just so unique that it's kind of awe-inspiring. And I'm always on the fence about how much to take photos of somebody's house, right? Like if I'm standing on the road, technically it's legal, but also is it polite or ethical? And I don't know the answer.
Right.
So I actually drove up the driveway, went to the door, knocked on the house and asked permission. I was met at the door by, like, I don't know, 50 very loud barking dogs. but finally, she came to the door and she goes, you know, I really appreciate you asking because most people just pull over to the side of the road, walk right up in our house, walk right into our yard and right to the side and start taking photos. So she was very, very appreciative and said, because you asked permission, absolutely feel free to take photos of wherever you want. So if you'd like to see them, I've got some I can show you.
And you post a lot of these kinds of things on your exploringupstate.com blog, so people may find some there.
Yeah, totally. In fact, it was probably my first cobblestone post in 2015. I was giving myself a challenge to post once a month, like 15 of something that I found in upstate. Like I did 15 different bottle trees. I got obsessed with those one month. 15 unique spiritual religious places. I got obsessed with that. I've always been obsessed with that, and one of them was cobblestone structures. So that's always been one of the more popular posts on my site, actually.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned stopping and knocking on her door and thinking about the reaction that people might have to people stopping. Is it, when you stop your car along the road, you're creating potential traffic hazard, and you pull in their driveway and then get out and start taking pictures. That's you're right. That feels invasive.
It
would to me if I lived there. So,
yeah, totally.
I've got to make sure I don't make too cool a garden in front of my house so people stop and like walk through the garden and take photos and things. So when did you start? When did you start exploring upstate?
Exploring upstate started as exploring upstate, I think, in 2013 or maybe early 2014. It actually kind of was a progression with a previous project that I had with a friend. We started a blog together called Exploring the Burned Over District. The burned over district is a phrase that refers to a point in time, kind of 1820 to 1860 or so, when central and western New York was a hotbed of spiritual activity. And there are all kinds of different religious movements that either were birthed here or really flourished here in this region. And we kind of decided we wanted to go and see all of these places in person. And then we quickly expanded to not just the ones that were historically relevant, but were particularly interesting or noteworthy that we were just curious about. And we did that for a long time, but the more that the deeper we got into those stories, the more difficult it was to not tell the stories that went along with all of those. When you're talking about the spread of religiosity and spiritual messages in the mid-1800s in upstate New York, it's impossible to not talk about the history of the Erie Canal, and it's impossible to not talk about civil rights movements and temperance and all the other things that were happening. And I wanted an opportunity to tell a lot of those stories and occasionally tell a story that didn't have any historical relevance at all. Sometimes it was just a fun food exploration or an interesting person I met or an interesting group. So that's how exploring upstate sort of evolved.
It seems like you run into some of the most interesting places by knocking on a door or someone that you run into while you're out looking at a historic marker, or you know, it's those kind of occasional or random things that you run into that often lead to the most fascinating stories. And we don't, if we're shut down at home, we don't run into those as often, which is one of the frustrations of being more locked down right now. We don't have those random people that you run into or cool places.
Yeah, I agree. There have been numerous times when, in fact, I sort of alluded to it at the beginning of our conversation today, that sometimes the journey is, not to sound cliche, but sometimes the journey is more engaging than the destination. Last year, actually, it was probably almost exactly a year ago, my pal Dennis and I went down to Howe Caverns. I hadn't been there in a long time, but we went to Howe Caverns. But before that, we stopped in Cazenovia, and we were just walking down the street randomly, just taking a break, and I saw this group of protesters, and it just looked like such an interesting scene. That there were this collection of protesters, and there wasn't anything particular that had happened recently that week. And I thought, what's going on with these people? And I walked right up and asked them, like, what are you guys doing here? And the story that I got was fascinating. They had been there every single weekend since the late 70s. Every single Saturday, the same group of people had been protesting. They had not missed one Saturday. And I became really enamored with their story. So again, really what we went for was Howe Caverns, but along the way we discovered these interesting folks.
So what were they protesting?
Well, in their original inspiration back in the 70s was sort of grown out of anti-war protests. They've sort of evolved into a general peace movement. So that particular week, there were folks who were unhappy with the president and some of the things that he's put into place. There were some folks who were trying to spread the word about single-payer health care. They've sort of grown into this group where collectively they don't have one particular message, but individually they all sort of are on board with wanting to promote change and peace in the world. But what got me was the fact that they had been there every single Saturday for decades. That type of dedication and passion, regardless of what your message is and whether or not I agree with it, that kind of dedication is fascinating.
It's kind of like an alternative newspaper that publishes every week, but it's live, in a sense, I guess.
Yeah. And holding up interesting signs.
Right. And again, if we're locked up at home, we don't run into, well, they're not protesting probably. Or maybe they are, with 6 feet between them.
Interesting.
Since
that's a good
outside.
Question.
But are there any doors you wish you hadn't knocked on? You know?
Are there any doors I wish I hadn't knocked on? No, I don't think so. I mean, I've had experiences that I haven't loved, but I've always kind of approached the things that I talk about with Exploring Upstate, that I would love to give a voice to the places and the things and the people that I think are worthy of being shared and worthy of being having other people familiar with. And I've always, rather than, you know, giving a I wouldn't call what I do reviewing, but essentially bringing bad press to something, I would rather spend my time and creative energy on talking about the things that I've found to be really wonderful. So, yeah, there are probably things that I haven't had great experiences with or have been frustrated with, but the cool thing is the places that I've found that are open to visitors have far outweighed everything else. You know, a lot of the people who, and right now, I guess I'm thinking people like town historians and county historians and stuff like that, people who are doing that kind of work do it because they're passionate about it and they love it. So if I call up the town of Marion historian who's a volunteer and say I have some questions, in nearly every single case, they're super excited because they've found a captive audience that they get to share their passion with. I actually mentioned Marion because today is their birthday.
The founding of Marion?
Yeah, so technically it was in 1825, but on this date, in 1825, they were founded as the town of Winchester, and this is in Wayne County. But 1 year later, it was switched, and they became the town of Marion, which I was tweeting about this morning, so that's why their name was on my mind.
Well, as part of your blog, you kind of keep track of what happened this day in New York history, so that's part of your blog, right?
I do have a page on there. That project alone could be a full-time job because for a long time I was just combing Wikipedia pages and finding dates and birthdays and deaths and all kinds of important stuff. But there's so many, like I mentioned, those town historians. There's so many people that have done such incredible work documenting every tiny little element of history in their town or their village, and combing through all that material and getting those dates is a daunting process. So I kind of go through waves of my dedication to finding new dates and putting it in there. But there's easily, I don't know, there's probably almost 1,000 dates in the database at this point.
And the beauty of the internet now is that we can access these things much more easily. And as these town historians and libraries, other places digitize more things, we can find more online. And compared to 20, 30 years ago, those town historians have a much better chance of getting the word out through their own website or through people like you that search them out.
Yeah, totally. When you start to research small town history, and I don't know if this is the case all over the country, but what I've found locally is every single historical timeline with a town is dotted with a fire at some point where records have been lost. I might contact someone saying, hey, I'm looking for information on something that happened in 1851. And they say, oh, unfortunately, our records go back to 1857 because that's when the town hall caught on fire and everything was lost or something like that. So one of the things that I think could be great moving forward is with the digital age is we have a better means of preservation than we were doing before. So hopefully the stuff that's happening now and the stuff that we've been able to digitize will outlast us by a long time.
Right, we're talking with Chris Clemens, exploringupstate.com, and also Instagram, Twitter. You're on most social media, right?
It depends on the day. I am. Yeah, there's a Facebook page for Exploring Upstate, a Twitter profile, and an Instagram page. I am just one person, and it is just a kind of a part-time hobby. So there are days when I say, you know what, I need a little break from social media. But yeah, all the content is there to check out.
You could have chosen a smaller region than upstate New York, you know. I mean, this show is the Finger Lakes, and I don't know, it's what, 9,000 square miles or something? I mean, it's just, choosing upstate is a big area.
In retrospect, I will go on record and say I didn't completely think through how much work there would be. But it's funny because I've had people say, for most of the time I've been doing Exploring Upstate, I've been writing weekly. In some cases, a little bit more. Some cases, I've taken off a couple weeks. More recently, I've taken off most of 2020 just to rest a little. I haven't written any blog posts since January, but I've still been doing social media stuff. I've had people ask me, like, could you really... like, how much longer can you really do this? And I think, like, you have no idea. Like,
right.
There could be blog posts written every single day about upstate New York, and still, in a lifetime, I couldn't cover it all. And when you start breaking down the ideas for things to cover, it's endless. And you're right. Even if I had just chosen, like, exploring Monroe County, I could probably do it weekly for a lifetime. When you look at our history, when you look at our culture, when you look at the people who make Monroe County so great, it's really endless.
And I love, like yesterday, driving through the different communities. We tend to take the same roads. We tend to take the fastest roads, like the thruway. We tend to stay, you know, on a schedule, and we miss all of these little towns and hamlets. I drove by one yesterday, and I should have turned left. I think it was Eagle something. I'd never heard of it, and it wasn't very far away. And this was, I think, before I hit Medina. And it was a left turn to like Eagle. I gotta look up what it was. It was like,
yeah,
4 miles left turn, and I couldn't believe I hadn't heard of it. We don't live that far away from there, and you know, so that one of my next trips that direction, I'm going to do that. I'm out that way fairly often, going to places like Herd Orchards, and but they're not open for the season yet. But these little fascinating places that are, you know, I've lived here for about 30 years, and it's less than an hour away, and I never heard of it, and I drive around more than most people do. How is that possible?
Well, and that's what I say. When I say that it's endless, there is so much just in our own backyard that I think is left to be discovered. I'm 40, and I've lived here my entire life, and there are a lot of things within an hour that I haven't seen or done. And that was really the impetus for me wanting to be sharing on a blog in the first place. I've had people approach me and say, you know, like, thank you so much for what you're doing and for sharing all these stories. And sometimes I feel a little funny about that, because in many ways it's for me. I'm fulfilled by going out and experiencing these new places and meeting new people and connecting more to the region that I grew up in and call home. So sharing those stories is sort of a secondary arm of that whole process, and that's fulfilling as well. But I've grown and changed and connected to Western New York and upstate New York in different ways because of that. So,
well, do you look things up, like this? The place I was talking about is actually Eagle Harbor. It's just beyond Albion. It's right on the Erie Canal, hence Harbor, I guess. And I'd never heard of it, but on Google Maps you can go and you can look in some detail at the towns. And do you spend any time doing that or doing research that way using Google Maps?
Constantly, yeah. Google has always been a really great resource. There have been times when I've thought, you know what, I have nothing going on this weekend. Let me find like some small town to just drive to. And sometimes I will just bring up Google Maps and randomly pick a place or a town that I've never heard of or never been to or never driven through, and say, I'm going to go to this one today. And sometimes I'll get there and there's not much to do. But again, sometimes it's about the journey and taking a road that I haven't seen before. There's a road that I've taken a couple times now in the last year, it's in Livingston County. It's not a seasonal road, but it's pretty close. And I found this random metal sculpture that looks kind of like a Muppet, but I think it's actually a Frisbee golf basket. And now, like I said, in terms of being connected, I know that road really well because I've connected with this random metal sculpture on the side of the road. So not only am I familiar with it, maybe it's silly to say that I feel a, a kinship to it, but I have a memory that's associated with that road now.
Have you named the sculpture yet? You got to give it a name.
No, but maybe that's one of those cases where I should get out of my car and go up to the house and ask. Maybe they've already named it.
Probably. I'm trying to imagine a basket from Frisbee Golf that looks like a Muppet. I really can't picture that.
I'll have to. I wonder if I posted it on Instagram already. If not, I will.
I can't visualize that. And these days, people are encouraged to go outside, to spend time outside, ideally, you know, social distancing, and that means the common and well-known parks are or can be relatively busy, although in the nice cold weather we've had, they really haven't been. I haven't run into many people even in some of the really well-known parks. But there are so many parks around our area within half an hour of downtown Rochester. Do you have any favorite places you go? And I've seen some posts of birds, and I think it was a hawk recently you posted on Instagram.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm noticing wildlife more than I have in the past, and I don't know what that's about. The hawk picture was from Tryon Park, which is actually a city. It's a city park. Well, it's a Monroe County park, but it's located in the city of Rochester. It's in the North Winton Village, and it runs along the west side of Irondequoit Bay. That's where I saw that hawk. That's a really popular park. There's also a lot of mountain bikers, so if you're going for a walk back there, be mindful that occasionally you got a bike tearing around the corner. The blue heron picture I posted was from the Sterling Nature Center, which is in Cayuga County in the town of Sterling, right on the southern shore there of Lake Ontario. Really, really wonderful park, just east of the Chimney Bluffs and Sodus there.
And by the way, it might be a little confusing to people that they think of Cayuga County being down by Cayuga Lake, and Cayuga County, if you look at a map, has this narrow section, sort of like the city of Rochester has this narrow section that goes up to Charlotte. Cayuga County actually goes up to Lake Ontario, which is weird. I don't know why that was done, but some political reason originally, probably. Each year I go up about this time of the year, we're actually... I got to check in with Bonnie from the cookie company, a fly by night cookie company up there in Fairhaven, because the marsh marigolds bloom right about now. It's kind of just before the honeysuckle leafs out. It blooms through the woods and in Fairhaven in particular, around Rochester some too. There's some areas on Ellen's Creek and in Browncroft, actually, by the library over there, a little bit in back of them, where these yellow marsh marigolds bloom, acres of them up in Fairhaven. So if you go up to the Sterling Nature Center, you'll probably drive through Fairhaven anyway, and you'll see these acres of yellow. Have you seen those in the woods?
I haven't, but now I'm really intrigued. It sounds like a great photo opportunity. But another question that I've got about Fairhaven now, you mentioned the Fly By Night Cookie Company. One of the things that's listed on their sign is also that they are a miniature museum. Do you know anything about that?
Oh, yeah. It's
What's the museum feature?
It's one wall of the bakery, which is basically like her front room. It's her house. And it's got all these miniature things, dollhouse type, but not kitschy, dollhouse doesn't do justice to it. It's really is fascinating, and I don't think I've ever asked her really how it developed and why she has it. She's a character.
I can tell you this. You can expect to see it on a future Exploring Upstate post because I've been intrigued.
Yeah, she's got a little shed in the backyard which has used books in it that you can buy, and she's got a piano in her kitchen basically where she bakes her cookies, and she has really good cookies, about like 40 kinds of cookies, and I've been going there for many years. She's been there for decades. I don't know that she's open right now with the shutdown. Who knows? If she's not there, she's probably walking her dog at Fairhaven State Park, which is just down the road. She is a fascinating person, and it's an amazing place. I was there on my way going to Oswego to visit someone a couple years ago, and she just took these rhubarb tarts out of her oven when I stopped, and I should have driven back to get all of them because I was eating as I was heading to Oswego thinking, I can't believe I just bought one of these. I should have purchased them all. They were so good right out of her oven. So she does pies and things too, but she's a character. Fascinating person and really good cookies. And that also struck me when I was driving to Lockport yesterday, is that I like stopping and trying foods and things. And you've posted about a whole bunch of interesting food places that you've run into that most people wouldn't go into because it doesn't look like it's worth stopping, or you wouldn't notice it. Parker's Pit was one I drove by yesterday. I was trying to remember whether you'd posted about that.
No, I don't know that one.
But you know, I'm reluctant right now to stop more places. I mean, why? I'll wait let's wait a month and then start stopping at places. But I miss that part of driving.
I agree, and I'm kind of on the fence about what to do and what my role is in the world right now. I've kind of been taking the approach that I am best served by keeping myself as safe and healthy as possible, and by doing so, keeping my community as safe and healthy as possible by staying away from them. I feel very grateful and lucky that I have a home and a yard, so I can walk out of my own house onto my own back deck into my own backyard and get some fresh air. I know not everyone has that experience. Even just, you know, if you think about people who are living in a high-rise building, you know, if you live on the 10th floor, you're passing hundreds of people and touching elevator buttons and doorknobs that hundreds of other people have touched. I feel very lucky that I have the ability to hunker down and be safe. So I've been taking advantage of that.
Well, people can access your blog post from tons of them online. They may end up just sort of getting lost in those and going from Angelica to Pollywog Holler and the Oswego Pierhead Lighthouse. And it's a great way to, you know, it's so cold out. I don't even want a garden right now because it's just too cold. When it's wind chills in the 30s, I'm not an active gardener. It's a perfect time to explore some of your old posts and there's tons of them there online for people to see. And do people send you suggestions of places you should see, this place or that, or is that how you hear about some places?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. I'll use Instagram to find new places, but I'm always open to someone sending me a message and saying, hey, you should check this out. Or I've had people invite me to places. So I've had mayors of towns reach out and say, we would love to have you. And There's all kinds of different ways. Sometimes I'm already familiar with those places and they're kind of on my radar. And for years, probably a decade now, I've kept a list broken down by regions. And it's a private list of just things that as I'm reading on the internet, I say, this is really interesting. I need to follow up on this. And I throw it in the list. And every time I cross something off that list, I end up adding two more things to it because there's just so much out there to do.
Yeah, well,
but I think right now is a Thank you very much. I was going to say right now is a great time for people to start planning what they want to do and see when we're able to get back out. So this is a good time to hunker down, but start planning.
Yeah. Learn more about some of the history of the places, and you'll enjoy yourself even more when you get there. Exploringupstate.com. Get some more details there. And we didn't get a chance to yet. We'll maybe talk for a minute about Rochester Food Net. You've been part of that relaunch of Rochester Food Net. And you've always posted some about food, but you're obviously very interested in it, and it's a passion of yours.
Absolutely, yeah. I've always wanted Exploring Upstate to be a collection of all kinds of different things. I do have a lot of interest, whether it's history or the arts or food or culture, events, all that stuff. But the thing with food is you can constantly get into all different aspects of the stories. And one of the things that I've always really liked about food is not necessarily here's something that tastes really good, you should go eat it, but the backstory behind that food. Like, for instance, one of the posts on Exploring Upstate is the history of Salisbury steak. So Salisbury steak might not be something you really want to eat, but the fact that it was invented by someone who lived in central New York, and it was the very first fad health food diet in the United States, that's the kind of stuff that really intrigues me about our food story. So I'm honored to be a part of the Rochester Food Net team and delve into some of those stories with you guys.
Well, one of your recent posts was on Rochester Food Net, making your own Luca wood fire pizza. Got the ingredients, and it must have smelled good in the kitchen baking that.
It did, and it was fun. Admittedly, I'm by myself, so it probably would have been more fun to share the experience and share the food with someone. But being able to write about it and share those food photos in some ways, sharing with others. I'm a big fan of the Gervasis and the work they do with both Luca Woodfired Pizza and Kitchen and Cocktail on Merchants Road in Rochester. And that was a fun way to be able to support a business that I liked.
Yeah, well, and some cool photography. I mean, that's partly what drives your blogs, posts at Exploring Upstate, and what you've done with Rochester Food Net too is you love photography, and that's something that it's sort of another passion of yours, I think.
Yeah, I've gotten more into it over the last few years. Historically, I was always just walking around with my phone and pointing it at things, and I thought, you know what, maybe it's time that I learn how to actually do this for real. So I bought a camera a few years ago and got some different lenses and started doing some online courses and continued to be very frustrated by the whole process. It's not uncommon for me to go out like Sterling Nature Center and take, 100 photos and come back and find that I've got, 15 that I really like. But it's been a fun process to learn some new skills and to be able to share better photos of those things that I think other people should experience.
Well, at least you didn't have to develop all those photos and then discover it, right?
Totally. I probably would have dropped out of the hobby way earlier.
You've been in a dark room and, putting all the film in the chemicals and then looking to see what you created, and then it's like, I just wasted my day.
Exactly. That's sometimes how I cook.
Excellent. I can't wait to see that post. But you did post at Rochester Food Net about what various foodies and food writers don't like. That's kind of a fun one for people to read. It's not all about how to cook or what the best foods are. It's what people don't like, right?
Yeah, as you know, I cannot stand mayonnaise anywhere near anything that I'm going to eat. Kicking around the idea in my head started getting me wondering. Like, I know there's a lot of other people locally, friends of ours, people who constantly create food content, and I thought, my gosh, I wonder if there's other people that have things like food, like quirks. And sure enough, I started talking to a few friends, and they have things that they absolutely will not touch that seem very common. I'll divulge one of the shares in the post was just eggs, and this is was from someone who just seems to eat everything under the sun. She loves everything, but eggs, absolutely not.
That's a big category.
Yeah, so that was intriguing to me to learn those things about some of our peers.
That's rochesterfoodnet.com. Rochester foodies won't touch these foods. Chris posted that just a couple weeks ago. Well, Chris, thank you for all the time this morning. And look forward to some road trips with you here in the near future.
Absolutely. Michael, thank you. And thanks for all the work you've been doing with Save Your Life, spreading the word to keep people safe.
All right. Have a great day.
Yeah. All right. You too.
Bye-bye. That's Chris Clemens, exploringupstate.com. Find him there, and you'll have fun exploring his posts from around New York State and rochesterfoodnet.com. We will take a quick break. Be back afterward from our sponsors on WYSL 1040. Michael Warren Thomas back here with the sponsors of Discover the Finger Lakes. Those include Full Moon Vista Bike and Sport, and I just picked up a bicycle from them. They are an essential business for transportation and for just helping people get outside, and they've got some great bicycles and technicians to fix yours if it needs some help. Go to fullmoonvista.com to get more details there on University, right near Culver, and very close to Sager Beer Works and Green Roots Winery and Wisteria, right in that area of Culver and University. Also brought to you by Arkimage on Monroe Avenue. They are great store, closed here during the shutdown, but will no doubt looking forward to reopening. And some of my favorite people, and it's businesses like this that make me just wish that we could get testing and all that ramped up so that we can reopen these businesses. Also brought to you by Glenora, Glenora Wine Cellars. They can ship you wine. Lots of different wines available, from sparkling to red to white wines and fruit wines. Go to glenora.com and get more details and have them ship you some wine here. Glenora.com. When you call and visit our sponsors, tell them you heard about it here on Discover the Finger Lakes. Michael Warren Thomas back here. It is Discover the Finger Lakes on WYSL 1040, 92.1 FM. We'll be back tomorrow with the Grapevine. And stay safe. Wear a mask if you go out to protect other people. And hopefully they'll wear one to protect you. And stay home if you can for the moment. We'll get this testing ramped up. We can get our businesses reopened. Have a great day.